Welcome to the Health Edge, translating the science of self-care. I'm Mark Pettis, and with my friend and buddy, John Bagnulo. John, good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Great to see you, bud.
Great to see you. It's been a long time that we've done a recording. I was just looking back, John. It's been about a year,
Yeah.
and an eventful year. 2024 was surely for everyone a pretty eventful year, but it's good to be together. And as busy as our lives are, hopefully we can bang out at least a monthly podcast. There are a lot of folks that I know still go back and listen to a lot of our Health Edge recordings. And I do want to remind folks that we have a pretty good library of content there going back several years. Neither John or I do a lot of social media, so I'm no longer on any of those social media outlets. So for anyone who wants to, beyond the podcast service that they like to use, our website, the healthedgepodcast.com, healthedgepodcast.com is a place that has all of our old recordings and some papers and PowerPoints and things like that. So I just wanted to remind people of that. John, you've been well?
Yeah, buddy, I'm doing really well, thanks. It's, as you said, it's been a time goes fast. It's hard to believe it's been a year, but it's great to get back on track with you.
Indeed. So we have a paper that we wanted to briefly review and use that as a basis for some principles that we've discussed in many podcasts prior. And I'm going to just share my screen here for a second, John, just to pull up this paper for folks. And hopefully this is coming across. So yeah, this was an article published not too long ago in the Journal of Nutrition. And the title of the article is Association of Egg Intake with Alzheimer's Dementia Risk in Older Adults. This is the Rush Memory and Aging Project. So Rush University is in Chicago, and they have a cohort. They do a lot of Alzheimer's research there, and they have a cohort called the Rush Memory and Aging Project, a group of about 1,000, a little more than 1,000 older adults, average age around, I think, 82. On that end of the age continuum. And they follow these, they've been following these adults over several years. The mean follow-up in this study was 6.8 years. And they were interested in addressing the issue of what is the association between egg intake and the acquisition or development of Alzheimer's. None of these folks had evidence of Alzheimer's at the entry of the study. And about almost 27%, which was 280 individuals over this near 7-year follow-up, did develop Alzheimer's. So it goes to point out just how prevalent Alzheimer's is, particularly as one gets older.
Yeah.
So it's about a 27% transition to Alzheimer's in that cohort of 1,000 or so people. Pretty impressive. And then they correlated based on these food frequency questionnaires, and we'll come back to this because this is a more of an observational study, and as we say, the conclusions can only draw associations. But what was interesting about this study, John, beyond the obvious, was that they biopsied the brains of over everyone who had died in this study, and were able to not only look at a clinical disease, a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, the clinical criteria, but also to look at changes in the brain, the pathology. And though the pathology has been sort of well described, I'm still not sure, John, that it's well understood. And so there's some good correlation here. And So what they found, and I'll just, cut to the chase, and then we can get into some discussion about it, John, because I want to obviously start by getting your thoughts. What they found was that in this cohort, people who consumed one or two or more eggs per week had as much as a 57% decreased risk of developing Alzheimer's or showing brain pathology changes that one would be consistent with Alzheimer's risk in this cohort. So eggs seem to be associated with pretty significant risk reduction. And so that's the study, and there are many caveats, as we'll talk about, in terms of the methodology. But it's I don't think you or I were at all surprised by the findings. But they do contradict and continue to contradict what many consider to be this risky food called the egg. What were your thoughts, John, as you look through this?
I guess the first thing I'd say, how powerful that is, you already mentioned it, but to think that 27% of these 1,000 participants developed Alzheimer's in just under 7 years, that in itself is very powerful. The second thing that I found interesting is that again, the investigators did a really good job of accounting for this, with the way that the study was balanced, so to speak. But I think, Mark, you correct me if I'm wrong, like 83% of the participants carried at least one of the APOE alleles. So, that was looked at. I think that's very significant in this discussion. And then I found it really interesting that choline, which is like a B vitamin for our listeners that aren't familiar with choline, it's a really powerful methyl donor. Methylation is a really big part of staying healthy, right? And having adequate methylation at all times. So, choline was really focused on as well by this investigative team. So, those three things really stand out. We know that choline levels can be, can really be low in some populations, and eggs are the best source by far. I mean, there's nothing else that's even close. So that is, low hanging fruit for them to look at. But the study and it's on a little bit of a smaller level. It's a little different, obviously, looking at Alzheimer's instead of looking at aortic calcification. But the study really reminds me a lot of the Rotterdam study, which now, is like 20 something years old. In terms of the Rotterdam study looked at vitamin K2, this study is looking at choline, and they're looking at slightly different diseases, although they may have a very common underlying cause, right? Inflammation and, not being able to maintain, tissue dynamics, so to speak. But the study was really powerful, Mark, in the fact that you're talking under 7 years, right? I mean, that's a really short period of time for the etiology of this disease. Then you look at the pathology findings, that you describe, getting a real clear illustration of what's happening there. And then you're talking about something, eggs. It's not the participants that got the most protection, the lowest risk. Not like they were eating 3 eggs a day. They're having between one, two, or more eggs per day. And to get that kind of risk reduction, with something as what I see as a modest dietary intervention, I think that's huge. You usually don't see, I know it's an association, as you point out, but you usually don't see associations that result in this kind of risk reduction like that. It's a really, really powerful finding. And I will conclude with this, that as we've talked about on multiple occasions, eggs are, yes, a phenomenal source of choline, but they're also a great source of K2, a great source of, again, omega-3s for people that don't eat oily fish, for people that don't eat grass-fed beef. I think eggs may be the only source that many individuals have for a source of DHA and or EPA, right? I mean, because it's just so rare that people eat oily fish in our society now. I mean, yeah, people do, but not with the kind of regularity that you need. And then it has some eggs have some vitamin D content. So, there's a lot of things, and there's modest amounts of some of these, but I think synergistically, these fat soluble vitamins really protect LDLs from oxidation. That's a big, and we know that that is a component to Alzheimer's. And then you get the whole choline, as I mentioned earlier, its ability to help with methylation. So, I mean, eggs are, again, Mark, we've said it on multiple occasions, one of the absolute best foods to include on a daily basis. And this is a great look at the consumption of eggs to Alzheimer's. And I would argue, based on other things, not just the Rotterdam study, but other studies, that eggs would be very protective against a variety of chronic diseases. So I love the study. I'm grateful for you sharing that with me. It's one that I'd missed. I didn't, you know, I did had not seen this until you sent it to me. But I again, it's the kind of study that I enjoy talking about the most, Mark, because it's unlike the what people consider the gold standard, right? The double blind, clinically controlled study. This is real life. I mean, I know it's an association, but it's real life. We know we're looking at just, something as simple as egg consumption to one of the diseases that is just exponential growth in terms of the increased incidence of Alzheimer's. So awesome stuff on many levels, but I like the the component of this, which is nourishment, right? I mean, a lot of people are malnourished. They're not aware of that. You're not going to, read that on, that's not a headline that we normally see. We still unfortunately see the headlines about excess saturated fat and excess, now at least there's some discussion around sugar and refined carbohydrates and how the excess amounts of all these things drive chronic disease. And that absolutely with respect to, sugar and refined carbohydrates. But, so much of chronic disease, Mark, is also the result of deficiencies. And we have, widespread deficiencies in some of the most important nutrients, and fat soluble vitamins being one of those, choline being another. So I really like that it highlights that.
Yeah, so many great points there, John. There is this novelty factor when, for, at least for me, when you see this this sort of cognitive dissonance around something that's been so condemned for so long, and we've had many discussions about this in prior podcasts that people can go back and look at, but the Alzheimer's research field, neither of us are neurologists, but you look at this research closely, and there's all of us as we get older. I mean, Alzheimer's continues to be one of the most horrific, I mean, I don't think that's an overstatement, diseases that any human can confront. And about 6.5 million people, this is data from a few years ago, in America have Alzheimer's. And it's projected that over the next 25 years, that's going to double. And despite all of the research and the billions of dollars that have been spent in the research enterprise to in an attempt to elucidate and ultimately cure Alzheimer's, there's been very limited, if any, innovative breakthroughs, and the medications aren't that effective. The epidemic of this degenerative neurologic disease continues to grow, and now we come down to what I think is an understanding that is shifting how many people think about Alzheimer's, as not so much this genetic predetermined disease of aging, but more of a metabolic disease. And we'll come back to talk about the ApoE story. But when you look at Alzheimer's as a chronic complex metabolic disease, it brings you into a very different sort of lens of how you think about it. And that lens is largely around metabolic biomarkers, right? It's where your blood sugar's at, it's where your insulin is at, it's where your inflammatory sort of biomarkers are at. And we've talked a lot about Dale Bredesen and others doing that. They're really looking at Alzheimer's as many things, right? This is not one disease. This is one final path of horrible deterioration of cognitive decline and an inability to function. And I would also add, John, I've done a lot of work in our community, our region, for hospice care through the years. And 10, 20 plus years ago, cancer was far and away the single leading diagnosis that would lead to a hospice referral. Alzheimer's has now surpassed cancer in many, many places as the number one cause. So this is a huge issue in terms of quality of life, caregiver stress and burnout, and obviously extraordinary suffering. So when you begin to look at Alzheimer's more in terms of the metabolic drivers, sugar, insulin, inflammation, and then walk that back to nutrition. As we often talk about, so much of what our nutritional guidelines have condemned may in fact be some of the more ideal nutritional choices to mitigate this horrible disease. And that would be things like eggs, red meats, of decent quality, animal protein in general, low glycemic, this elimination of flour, sugar, these processed grains, that it it this research, a paper like this for me, while it still has that sort of novel impact for those who aren't following this science, is very much consistent with this new way of thinking about Alzheimer's and foods that we condemn and people fear. I still meet people, John, that I'm semi-retired now. So, as a semi-retired person, I can actually go out for breakfast and meet with a friend that I worked with for 30 years. Some of them are physicians, some, scientists, some of them are just business community people. They all still tend to fear the egg, fear that slice of meat or that hamburger. And as so many people have been struggling with inflation and just the affordability, and while the price of eggs has gone up, it's still one of the great values.
Absolutely.
The nutrient density per dollar for an egg is just so compelling, and so all of that starts to make more sense when you rethink about what's actually going on in the brain as drivers of Alzheimer's disease. And so this sort of adds to that body of understanding that I think the 2025 dietary recommendations are going to be coming out later this year, and it'll be interesting to see how much, if any, latitude is extended to some of these animal-based foods, the protein, the fat that accompanies these foods. You point out, John, so many remarkable micronutrient aspects of the egg yolk, right? The egg yolk has got everything that needs for this animal to fully develop. And so a lot of that is neurologic development and choline and some of the omega-3 essential fats and lutein, all these these carotenoids, these phytonutrients that we know are anti-inflammatory and enhance mitochondrial sort of resilience in terms of oxidative stress. It mechanistically, there are just so many attributes of what we know to be highly concentrated in an egg that so many redeeming values. And so this it's the fear factor, though maybe it's gone down some, I think as more people just based on their experience realize that there's a dissonance between the recommendation and what the experience of consuming these foods actually is hopefully will continue to expand.
The one thing that you point out there that I always try to look at things on a cost benefit ratio. And you say, well, okay, we know the benefits in terms of the fat soluble vitamins, the choline. Of course, the protein quality is exceptional, right? You're getting around 7 grams of the highest quality protein. You're getting your branched chain amino acids, which are so valuable to many people for the preservation of lean body mass. The list goes on and on in terms of the benefits. And then I say, what is the cost? Like, is it the cholesterol that's found in an egg? Because that's one thing that has been loosened up, right, in our dietary guidelines. I mean, just about everybody now has come to a level of acceptance that dietary cholesterol doesn't move the needle with respect to serum cholesterol. So I'm always, when I meet with someone, I'm always curious as to what they see as the cost. Like, how is it? What's the mechanism? How would eggs increase your risk for heart disease? How would eggs increase your risk for any chronic disease if it's not dietary cholesterol, which again is, kind of been washed away? I'm fascinated by how there's like a certain level of imprinting, right, Mark? That you're told something maybe from an early age, and then you're next thing you're 50, 60, 70 years old, and you're still avoiding it, even though, the science certainly shined a light on all the fallacies of that idea. So that's one thing. The other thing that's really interesting is, you point out the cost of an egg. Let's just say we went with $6 a dozen. I mean, I think that's what you're going to pay for, higher quality eggs if you choose to go that route. You're talking 50 cents for an egg. I mean, you're not going to find anything in our food supply that gives you what an egg does for 50 cents. It's unbelievable. It's a true superfood. People, like to talk about things like kale and blueberries as superfoods, but they're really not in terms of their nourishment. They have some really amazing qualities, but those qualities are typically pretty myopic in terms of an antioxidant or something like that. But the egg is, it's just on every level, it's a superfood. So yeah, I love this kind of paper. I always tell people try to eat three eggs a day. I get a lot of quizzical looks, three eggs. I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's easy. It's easy, right? I mean, there's so many ways. It's such a versatile food as well. And I think it's,
It is easy.
yeah, you can do anything with it.
You can do anything with it. And I love the way you break that sort of economic analysis down, John. Imagine for 50 cents to a dollar a week, because that's what we were looking at in this study,
I know, yeah.
two eggs or more per week. Imagine if Big Pharma were to come up with a medication that only costs 50 cents to a dollar a week to take that could reduce your risk of Alzheimer's by over 55%. That medication today doesn't exist. And while there are a lot of sort of caveats with this kind of methodology, the evidence is becoming so much more consistent. We know, we've talked a lot about this, John. If you look at ketogenic diets, and their impact on neurodegenerative diseases in general, from Alzheimer's to Parkinson's to ALS, as more research is mounting. By definition, these are nutritional interventions, if you will, that are very high in fat and tend to be, they don't have to be, but they tend to be a little higher in protein. And so again, when you look at macronutrient mixes, you begin to see how it defies what the logic has been around fat and certainly animal protein, which is deeply etched into our psyches, and it's hard to break free of that. The other thing that this makes me think of, John, particularly in this demographic, this demographic that I am getting closer to, I'm in my late 60s now, soon I'll be turning 70. I think about this all the time because I'm now, sort of in that target range, is this epidemic of sarcopenia. So older people are often confronting not just the generation in their brains and in their bones, but in their musculoskeletal systems. And we know that most adults, particularly older adults that tend to be more anabolic resistant, are simply not getting enough protein that's bioavailable, of good quality, that has all of the essential, non-essential amino acids, and in one tidy package, can really provide a good source of that protein. So, While we're talking about Alzheimer's, this broader picture of adults, particularly older adults in general, simply not getting enough protein and struggling perhaps with how to incorporate more protein in their lives, particularly if they're fearful of eggs, if they're fearful of animal protein, red meat in particular, it becomes an almost overwhelming task to get that intake of a gram and a half of protein per kilogram per day,
Yeah.
much higher than the RDA recommendations. That's kind of another discussion. But the value of eggs in particular is so essential when you begin to look at this broader health and wellness and functional capacity of all adults as they get older. This is, as you say, it is a bit of a superfood. And when you're supporting local farmers and people who are ethical and mindful and conscious in the way that they raise animals and the foods that they produce, there are just so many wins here.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great way to sum it up. A lot of wins in this situation. If you choose to buy, local eggs that are, raised ethically, you're supporting your local farmer, you're supporting yourself, you're getting nourished. And that's we couldn't ask for more.
You couldn't ask for more. Well, good discussion, John.
Yeah, love
I
it.
will. I will post the paper on our website, the healthedgepodcast.com, and as well as a both a video and an audio copy of this podcast. And really look forward, John, to sharing more content over the course of the year. We'll start slow and
Yeah.
see how that goes. And anything, but before we just say goodbye for now, John, anything on your radar from a nutritional science perspective, something you've been following that's sort of hot and cutting edge?
I mean, something that you and I have talked about in the past because of all your interest and passion for light. I was really amazed to see the JACC publish a paper, as well as something in Open Heart through the British Medical Journal on sulfation and how that is important for maintaining, certain levels of heparin sulfate, maintaining electronegative charge on RBCs. So, that's gaining a little traction, which is cool. James Nicolantino, who I know you're familiar with, does a lot of research in the area of cardiology. Obviously Jim O'Keefe, who we've talked about some of his papers. These are two of the investigators in both of those papers. But sulfation continues to be alive and well, and will, I think, be becoming an integral part of the conversation around heart disease as well. So I'm always interested in how, whether it's heart disease, Mark, or as you've already said today, Alzheimer's, these conditions that most people have a very, very narrow focus on, whether it's genetics with Alzheimer's, whether it's cholesterol with heart disease. What I'm always intrigued by is how these diseases are really at the confluence of all these different inputs, most of which are environmental, right? Their lifestyle, nutrition, and other things. So it's that's an area that I'm always really interested in. There have been a couple of good papers as of late.
Yeah, that's great stuff. That might be a good place to come back to next
Yeah,
month as we
that'll be
think about
good.
our next topic. Well, great to see you as always, John.
You too, buddy.
Be well,
Miss
stay well, and we thank those that have been patient enough to kind of stick with us. And a lot of people I know in more recent months have discovered some of the content that we offer. Neither John or I accept any commercial support. We just do this because we love it. We like the science, and we do like to challenge conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom, one might say, has not served us very well when you just look around and see what's going on. So it is an interesting time in many respects as the food industry, and there's a bit more public consciousness around around how sick we are and what's wrong with that. And I do think it feels like a good time to resurrect a lot of what we talk about, John. So I'm really grateful for that. And I will see you next month.
Absolutely. Take
All
care,
right.
Mark. Great being with you.
You too, buddy.